Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight we have a horrifying story about the state of California. I know, terrifying, right? California's got a lot of things wrong with it. But this one in particular is about when people go missing. Now stay tuned, you're not going to want to miss this. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. The cabin in the woods has been abandoned for years, but one night, a candle burned in the window. My family moved out into the middle of nowhere, as rent prices were too high to stay in town. We ended up in the middle of the woods in Redding, California. The Suburban my mother drove pulled into a parsonage on the edge of town, kicking dirt from the road as it came in. An old church sat in the same driveway, and beside the same street there was nothing but gravel, trees, and the I-5 freeway. My brother and I piled out of the cab, stretching our legs in the driveway. The youngest of us fussed in a car seat from the long drive. My mother pulled the baby out and held him to calm him down. His name was Todd, but everyone called him Bear on account of the teddy bear he never went without. We all stood outside of the dingy, yellow-painted house. Its wood was rickety, and the shingles on the roof had begun to curl, yet none of us seemed to mind. A bad marriage and a worse divorce had my mom call in a favor from a friend of hers out of town. Next thing we knew, we piled into Redding, California, being told, "Don't worry, you'll see your dad in a month or two when we get it all worked out." Chris and I, being 11 and 14, didn't have much to say. We just looked at the rickety shack and hoped there was a place to plug in our games. "Julian, you and Chris get the stuff into the house while I feed the bear. Then I'll get us some burgers from the shop up the road. Sound good?" I nodded, and Chris helped with only a little complaining. Truth be told, we were tired from the drive and were having none of it. The last fight we got into had our mom wind up in some emotional breakdown, and neither of us wanted to see that again. So we did as we were told and started falling in. The inside had the basics. A dusty carpet, working plugs, water that tasted like it came from a hose. Apparently the preacher who lived in here before us was involved in some kind of scandal. We didn't know much, but my mom's friend was a member of the church and they needed someone to keep an eye on the place. And we needed a place to stay, so it was a match made in heaven. I remember the place smelled of mothballs and the faintest scent of a dog now long gone. I was allergic and the smell made my eyes itch, but I always wanted one, so I never said a word about it. The living room was sectioned off with the wall. The back half held a fireplace with an extra bathroom by the glass back door. That's where Chris and I would stay. My mom would have the room in the back with the toddler and a crib. Weeks went on as we unpacked. My parent had a job doing online counseling and tutoring on the side in her room. I'd babysit the bear while she worked, and we'd go to church on Sundays at least out of obligation. The people who ran it were in their golden years. They made the occasional snide comment about my mother being unmarried. Most of it went right over our heads, however, and my mom grinned and bore it stoically. After all, it was this or back in Boise. It was the beginning of June, so school wasn't an issue. We spent our days watching TV and swinging acorns at each other from the tubes of PVC. Everything was fine, until I saw Chris looking out the window after sundown. He'd sit in his bed, propped against the window and staring into the night. Time went on, but the habit stayed. One day, I finally put down the lingerie catalog I stole from the mall and asked him about what he was doing. "We're the only ones out here, right?" Chris asked, not so much as looking in my direction. Except for the cars on the road, yeah. I wondered what it was he was getting at until he pointed outside. You see that? He asked me as I peered over his shoulder, and sure enough, I did. Way out in the woods behind the house, there was the tiniest flicker of light. It was out in the hills where, to our knowledge, was nothing but trees and Shasta Lake on the other side. It doesn't happen every day, Chris explained, scooting over to give me room to see. At least once a week, the light comes on and all the birds in the woods go quiet. They do not. This wasn't my first time he tried to scare me with some nonsense, but the look on his face told me he was nothing but serious. No giggle, no poorly hidden smirk, only the look of curiosity and a bit of fear. After replying in disbelief, I peered into the darkness and tried to look again. The light flashed with a rhythmic pattern. It would go on and off again, over and over. It was the strangest thing ever. Something told me there was more to it than that, yet I was more concerned with what Chris had told me a second ago. I went to the kitchen, bagged one of our bins of trash, and headed outside to the dumpster. Tossing it into the clang, I listened, and sure enough, he was right. The woods were always alive with the howl of coyotes, chirpings of birds, even the occasional screech of a possum. Our mother warned us about it on the road here from Idaho, but there it was. Not a sound, save for the drone of vehicles bounding down the freeway. Nothing else but silence in between. I came inside and told Chris not to worry about it. He went back to his video game, and I to my ill-gotten gains, but the women in lace weren't as fun to stare at. Something bugged me about the flicker. Three flickers, three long strips of black, and three again. Over and over in their pattern, I tried to keep it out of my mind, but the feeling of something wrong stayed with me even as I went to sleep.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
The next morning, I tried not to think about it. My mother went on feeding baby carrots to the baby, who was now very proud of himself for being able to hold one. Chris was trying to set up the TV to watch Saturday morning cartoons, and I was putting the dishes in the wash to soak. I was going to join him, but I never knew a thing when it came to electronics. I reached in the boxes in my room and grabbed an old Louisville Slugger I got from my dad. A few baseballs followed, and I was off to go outside and practice my swing. If I got lucky and practiced, I heard I could join the JV team when school started. The backyard was short for being in the wilderness, as the woods behind it were drowned in poison oak. The only other option was to go in the front yard and try not to hit the church. Facing the mountains, I got into my rhythm. I tossed the ball in the air with the swing of my bat and heard the crack as it sailed across the sky. It was poetry in motion, as something about the process just put my brain at ease. Staring off into the woods as that itch grew in the back of my mind. Crack. Another ball whistled through the air. I wondered why it bothered me so much, staring off into the distance. Crack. This one leered left field, and I thought it was because the pattern seemed so unnatural. Crack. I overcompensated it and headed right. I reached in the box to grab another. It was almost as if the flickers were trying to tell me something. It was trying to tell me something. A wave of pins and needles ran through me as I came to the realization. I ran into my room so fast I banged into the glass door. Rubbing my nose and swearing to myself, I pulled it open with a heavy creak and tore into my remaining boxes. My mother yelled across the house, bouncing Bear to keep him calm. "You all right?" "I'm okay." I didn't even look up from the boxes. Old robot toys and Little League trophies flew across the room as Chris walked in looking at me like I was nuts. It was then I found it. A JROTC manual a church gave me when I was young. This was just post 9/11 at the time, and the Army was more pushy when it came to marketing to kids. I flipped through the survival tips and call signs till I got what I was looking for. A chart explaining Morse code showed every letter in a series of dots and dashes. Sure enough, I was right. Three dots, three lines, three dots. SOS. I showed it to Chris and he turned pale. He adjusted the glasses too big for his head, reading it over and over, trying to prove me wrong. Try as he might, there was no getting around it. That flicker was a call for help. Mom would never take us, but we never wanted her to be in danger either. We didn't think to call the cops, and a couple of stupid kids thought we were going to save the day. I'll never forgive myself for what happened next. Nightfall came and the flicker made its call. The two of us came with our flannel shirts and tools in hand. I brought my baseball bat and Chris had his flashlight. Standing in the tree line, I pulled out my compass to check our direction. The light was due east so long as we followed suit. Heading west when it was over, we'd make it back okay. I explained this to Chris, who nodded with a smirk. As long as we don't end up coyote food. We giggled at his joke and off we went, eager for adventure. I remember the trees were different in the night sky. They weren't the white aspen trees we were used to seeing in the cold, but the twisted red of manzanita. Gnarled branches of reaching oak hung above, and I couldn't help but feel like the woods were closing their hands around us. Chris was brave beyond his years, and he marched forward with a grim determination. Truth be told, I was more scared than he was, yet that signal was a call for help, and we had to go and save them. We hiked along these trees for what felt like an hour. Chris shone his light at my compass, and working together, we stayed in the right direction. Roots from the trees made us stumble, yet no one really got hurt, except for a few scrapes and a bruise along my shin. We stopped to marvel at the lack of animal life and how loud the sound of our trek had been. Every crushed leaf and branch echoed in those woods as we climbed even higher up the hills. When our legs tired and bodies sore, we saw it in the distance, the flicker and shine of a light. I grabbed Chris and made him cut the flashlight, and we crept low towards the source. The woods had made a clearing, and at the center on a small ridge was an old shack. I learned later that it was an outpost for the surveyors who long since found a better place to work. The panels and boards that made the thing were splintered. It rotted even at the point of crumbling the powder at the ends. I most remember its smell of urine and a bitter coppery scent as we drew near. Looking closer at it, we found what we came for. A candle lantern glowed in a filthy window and a lone hand waved between them. Fear gripped us both, yet we swallowed it down and pressed on. The iron door handle glimmered like ink in the moonlight. Chris stood behind me while I held the door with my free hand gripping the bat. Swallowing hard, I turned the handle and rammed my shoulder in. The lantern glowed in the darkened hovel, and in its corner, there was a girl. She couldn't have been much older than us at the time. Her scared in the dark, with shoulder-length hair so blonde it was almost white, and freckles on her face in terror. She hid in the corner with her arms shielding her face as a pathetic cry escaped her. Her bare legs curled as she covered in the corner wearing a one-piece bathing suit with a chain around her neck. The irons were bolted to the wall in a set that looked new compared to the rest of the place. The hand protecting her wore a band from a water park, and her face wore a mix of bruises and fear. Please, don't hurt me anymore. She sobbed as we stood in the doorway, our silhouette making us look like monsters. Her plea for mercy snapped us out of our shock and we immediately came to help. Chris removed his flannel while I looked around the house for a key. Hey, we saw your signal. It's okay, we're here to help. Chris consoled her while I checked around the table and chair for a key. The place had all the signs of a regular stay. Beer bottles, canned chicken, and jerky. A mattress laid in the corner and a handful of small glass pipes and empty baggies. A bucket and a bag of dog food were left by the girl, a clear sign of her conditions.
Ask her where the key is,
I whispered low across the room, looking at the corners left by the original owners. She pointed to the top of a tool closet used as a coat rack. Sure enough, as I reached my hand above, I felt the cold metal keys in my grasp. I hopped down and we set her free. The ration cuts around her neck must have burned as she choked a sign of relief. She shivered in the cold, rubbing the wounds where the choke chain had been.
How'd you get the lantern tied up like this?
I asked her as she got her bearings.
He said if I was quiet, I could have a light.
Her chest heaved with a panic attack brewing at the thought of her capture as she started to cry.
He hurt me.
She sobbed, holding Chris's shirt as a gift of decency to her chest, warding off the memories and trauma.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
The sight of her made us want to cry as well, but we held it together and got her to her feet. As we stood up, we heard a rumbling from an old engine. Headlights shone across the night. A car door slammed and a man came running from a pickup truck that looked as ancient and beat up as the house. He stood in the doorway, cornering the three of us. A towering figure, obese with a second chin wiggling as he spoke. He wore a grease-stained wife beater that stunk with malt liquor and filth. The stains off-colored pooled around his neck and pits. A pair of jeans that covered the food with a large belt buckle that peaked beneath the weight of his hanging stomach. His arms were yoked, and the hair that crawled from the sides of his balding head to his mustache was a thick, oily black. His breath was hot and stunk as he swore at us, demanding,
"Where do you think you're going with that?"
His disgusting hand pointing a round, fat finger at the girl. I couldn't say a word. I did the one thing that my synapse in my mind allowed me, and I threw my baseball bat as hard as I could. It spun through the room and hit the skull with a crack. He stumbled back and raged as I grabbed the lone chair in the room, smashing it against the window. Chris and I grabbed the girl, tossing her through the hole. She landed in the broken glass and dirt with a thud, yet adrenaline had kept her going. I hopped over next with Chris behind me. I was going to turn to catch him to help him land. The fall down ridge was a 10-foot drop. His hands gripped the windowsill, and as I looked up, his head and chest were free. His eyes went wide as I heard him scream as he disappeared, pulled back into the darkness. I heard the man roaring over him as the crack of my baseball bat cut my brother's scream short. Again, and again, and again, until a sound like a watermelon popped with a final swing. I screamed. I screamed until my throat tore and tears ran down my eyes. It was the girl who pulled me to my feet and we ran. Coward that I am, we ran, leaving my poor brother far behind. The moon did little to guide our way, but we tore through the bushes and trees alike. The man chased after us and raged, still holding the bat wet with my brother's blood. Branches cut through our shirts, blood trickled down the scrapes from our limbs as the girl and I retreated. Winding trails were no longer a question. The only way for us was down. Down the way from that monster who smelled of cheap booze. His voice roared over two terrified children in the dark.
I pulled the girl up as she fell, and she did the same for me. Our tiny bodies saving us from much of the climbing around the thicket our pursuer had to deal with to follow. It's the only reason I'm still alive. On and on we went until finally we made it through. My knees hit the dirt road with the girl right behind me. I didn't know what would happen next, but the faintest voice in the back of my mind said, "Go home, go home." So I did. I grabbed the girl with my brother's shirt, pulling at her to follow. We ran on the rocks that cut our feet, but we didn't care. What we'd do when we got home, I had no idea, but we would make it there. It was then we saw police cars, the red and blue beacons of safety as we collapsed in my yard and cried. My mother ran out to us, calling out for Chris. "Where's your brother?" she asked. And all I could do is sob, telling her I let him die. The girl's name was Allison. She went into the restroom at a water park in Reading, where the monster waited for her with a rag full of chloroform. It was a light day for the park, so the minutes it took for her to suffocate were free of prying eyes for him to work. Nobody raised an eye when the assumed father carrying a sleeping girl to his truck outside. She was meant to be sold from that place and never seen again. The fifth missing girl in a month. The police went on the lookout. They found my brother's body, which had a closed casket burial, paid by the church. We moved out of there a week later as I couldn't sleep anymore, and when I did, I woke up screaming. After a few months living in a friend's living room, it was close to a happy ending. Allison grew up and left for Oregon, and unfortunately, I'm still here, working at a gas station night shift. Now and again, I'll come to smoke at my brother's grave. I tell him I'm sorry it wasn't me who died instead. Bear grew up and joined track and field, and a baseball was never seen in my house again. I got a job out here, and life moved on, but sometimes I look out my window knowing they'll never find him. Even worse, I'll peer out into the dark of the mountain woods, and I swear I'll see that candle flickering in the dark.